Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Gilman Star for the week of February 3rd. We'll start as usual with the As We See It column. First of all, thanks to the staff at the Star for taking over for us while we took some time off to go to the Alabama coast for a few days. We had originally intended to fly to Hawaii to mark our 40th anniversary, but you can guess what happened to that idea. The plan now is to go next year. We like the Gulf Shores, Orange Beach, Alabama area, and it's not too crowded this time of the year, since most Southerners don't consider the January-February temps to be warm like we do. Judging from the parking lot of the building where we have an apartment or condo, a lot of other Midwesterners have the same idea. Common license plates are from Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, and some from Illinois. Some of those states have organized activities like golf outings and potlucks. Even more local are some from Iroquois County here, as well as from some former residents. It was unusually warm here the past few days, with temps in the 70s, which spawned a few storms, and we could very well be home before you read this, since we have a grandchild's birthday party to go to this weekend. We know that delivery of the Star has become an issue, as has been delivery of regular mail. We pay all our bills before we leave on vacations, but this time we got one credit card bill that was due the very day we received the statement. We have some subscribers, even in county, who have problems getting their papers, and we're trying to work something out. We are always looking for different ways to get down here, and lately have been taking US 45 from south of Paducah. It's divided four-lane with local access all the way, but there's never any traffic on the road, especially in Mississippi. One unexpected highlight was going to McGuire's Irish Pub in Pensacola, where the Navy has a base and flight training. In the past, we have also visited the Navy's Flight Museum on the base, which has a Blue Angel presence, since the Precision Flight Team practices some there. In fact, the whole town has adopted the Blue Angels, and recognitions to the team are all over town. McGuire's has Blue Angel memorabilia pasted over just about every wall, and since this was not our first time there, we again were looking for any old pictures of our Gilman High School classmate, 1965, Niall Kraft, who was killed in a training accident in the desert in 1977, just a few months after he had visited Gilman. We knew that Niall had been in his second year as a Blue Angel pilot and was scheduled to be one of the six pilots on the team. Four fly in formation together while the number five and six pilots are solo events. As we perused the wall opposite table 504, we saw a picture of a single jet heading into the sunset with the inscription, "We're going to miss you, number six." We asked our waitress if she had any background on the picture, and she supposed it was a farewell to the sixth pilot who was killed in training. We knew Niall was one of the solos, so we called another classmate, Wes Lundsberg, who had been an Air Force pilot, and kept in touch with Niall in regard to their military lives. Wes said, yes, Niall was the sixth pilot. In the meantime, Jan had spotted another picture on the wall a few feet away. It was a composite of the Blue Angel pilots who had lost their lives while flying with the team, and sure enough, Niall was on it. And now the Iroquois County COVID-19 update from County Public Health. From February 2nd, lab-confirmed cases stood at 2,296. Test results, 36,015. Negative, 33,325. Positive, 2,296. And deaths, 57. Of the confirmed cases, 2,605 have recovered and been released from isolation. Zero are hospitalized, and 28 remain isolated at home. By zip code or town, Gilman on January 26th was at 284, as of 287. Clifton rose from 251 to 255. Ashcombe, 149 to 150. Danforth, 81, remained constant. Onarga, 226, rose to 231. Watseka, 544, rose to 555. Crescent City remained at 62. Cisna Park remained at 173. Thawville remained at 37. and Piper City Rose won from 118 to 119. Sports have returned to IW. At press time, we were waiting to hear more about the return of basketball play at Iroquois West High School and boys basketball and girls volleyball at Iroquois West Middle School. Games are scheduled. IWMS boys basketball had their first game last night, and copies of the schedules are in this edition. At this time, they are trying to determine the logistics of spectators and being able to stay within the COVID parameters. Please call the school if you have any questions about attending games. We will have more information next week, as well as IWHS rosters. And there are a couple of great pictures of both the boys and the girls' senior varsity basketball squads. Senior girls pictured are Chloe Baker, Ashton Miller, Abby Coker, Shelby Johnson, Giselle Emma Lopez, and Taylor Talbert. Some of the senior boys on the IWHS varsity basketball squad are Connor Price, Jack Pree, Ryan Tilstra, Jack McMillan, Ty Pankey, and Cade Kimmels. Seniors not pictured are Mario Salazar and Clayton Leonard. The next game for high school boys is February 9th at Central at 6 p.m. High school girls basketball, February 6th versus Thomas More at 11 a.m. and February 8th at Central at 6 p.m. Next game for the middle school boys basketball team, February 6th at Piper City at 9:30. Middle school girls volleyball, February 9th at Donovan at 4:30. For full schedules, please see the print edition or call the school for information. Larry and Ann Wasmer Fisher celebrated their 65th wedding anniversary on February 5th. They were married in the Onarga Methodist Church in 1956. They've been blessed with 4 children, 8 grandchildren, and 7 great-grandchildren. Larry and Ann reside in rural Gilman. John and Judy Goldenstein celebrated their 65th wedding anniversary on February 4th, 2021. John and the former Judy Lubchow were married at St. John's Lutheran Church in Buckley. The couple farmed in the Gilman-Danforth area until they retired in Onarga. They have 3 children, Jay and Charlie Goldstein, John and Diane Goldenstein, and Jill and Dave Christie, along with 7 grandchildren and 14 great-grandchildren. If you're looking for your first semester honor roll list from Central High School, names are posted in the print edition. Tri-Point student wins DAR history contest. The Governor Thomas Ford chapter of the National Society of the Daughters of the American Revolution, NSDAR, has announced Rebecca Greiner as this year's winner in the chapter's annual American History Essay Contest. Rebecca is a 7th grader at Tri-Point Junior High School in Piper City and the daughter of Amanda and Thomas Greiner of Cullum. The theme of this year's essay contest was the Boston Massacre. The topic was chosen by NSDAR to mark the 250th anniversary of the Boston Massacre, which was considered to be a pivotal event that paved the way to the American Revolution. After learning about the events of March 5th, 1770, student entrants wrote essays using historical facts about what their family's reaction to the Boston Massacre might have been. Essays were judged on accuracy, originality, spelling, and grammar. The contest was open to all students in public, private, or parochial schools in Ford County, along with students who were homeschooled. A chapter program to honor Rebecca is tentatively planned for 2:30 p.m. on Sunday, May 2nd, in Gibson City. There will be a fish fry at the Thawville American Legion this evening, Friday, February 5th, 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. Drive-through only. Please enter from Main Street from the West End. 2020 Dean's List at Aurora University. Aurora University has named Kelly Ward of Gilman to the Dean's List for the fall 2020 semester. Ward is majoring in Bachelor of Social Work. The Dean's List recognizes full-time undergraduate students who who have earned a 3.6 GPA or higher. Ward was recognized with high honors this semester, having earned a perfect 4.0. Don't forget, if your name appears on the birthday list this week in the print edition, you can have a free sundae at the Gilman Dairy Queen or the Gilman McDonald's, a quarter pound of fudge from the front porch, and a free movie at the Onarga Theater. Just clip the print edition list and take it to those businesses for your free birthday treat. Celebrating 20 years of service, James Barnett, preparation operator. Incobrasa Industries proudly recognizes James for his many contributions to our company. He consistently maintains a good attitude and shows respect toward his co-workers. His thoughtfulness, positivity, and composure are among his greatest strengths. He is always available and ready for work. Thank you, James. The garage schedule. Friday, February 5th, 6 to 8 p.m., Friday night hangout for grades 4 through 5. Students must sign up to attend. Call or text Bev at 708-921-6304 before noon on Friday. On Wednesday, February 10th, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., the Cub Scouts Wolves second grade den meeting. And now the column by Russ Mann, COVID deniers. Americans are not unique in that when a nation confronts a national crisis, they usually rally together. A common enemy can be anything, a catastrophic weather event, a foreign invasion, terrorist attack, or a pandemic. In ordinary times, the people of most any nation will recognize the common enemy and enthusiastically present a united front to oppose it and to defeat it. Generally, a nation's leader is the cheerleader for that opposition and stands ready to protect his people. Unfortunately, facing a worldwide pandemic while other nations around the world have done so with a high degree of success, that's not where we have been. Last year at this time, President Trump said there are 12 cases of COVID in the U.S., soon it would be zero. That was nearly 26 million cases ago. Now the new president is aggressively addressing the failures that brought us to those numbers. So when can we get back to normal? Does anyone even remember what normal is or was? Look around at the people who complain the loudest that wearing a mask is violating their rights to be irresponsible. Shutting down to get the virus under control has closed their workplace, and closing their favorite watering hole has cut into their social life. Those deniers find someone else to blame, that their life smells worse than a litter box, and they buy into every conspiracy theory that comes along, as long as it suits their agenda. They're the same people that I saw in a local dollar store in Iroquois County last week. The first six people I encountered were barefaced and exercising their rights. The other masked customers were doing their best to avoid them, and it's just as bad in the only large department store in our county, Seat. It would be a shame for county merchants if, in the absence of enforcement of that mask requirement, shoppers decided to make their purchases in an urban community where more people take the pandemic seriously. Do those same pandemic deniers rant about opening the economy so they can get their lives back? Of course, but they're the problem that makes it more difficult to do. Commenting on the economy, Winston Churchill once observed that healthy citizens are the greatest asset any country can have. He could have said healthy workforce. Ask any employer if it affects his or her business plan to have employees calling in sick on a business day. These are unusual times, and they call for unusual measures, yet some Americans are incapable of adjusting. 14 members of the same family in Texas tested positive for the coronavirus following a small gathering in June, hosted by a man who says he believed the coronavirus was a hoax. One of the 14 has died, and another is on life support. Tony Green, a Dallas resident who hosted the event, said he was a former COVID-19 denier. I was a hard that stood up for my God-given rights. After Jackie Stockton's 90th birthday party in early March, COVID-19 broke out. Two family members did not survive. Michael Lang, an 18-year-old, grew up in a close-knit community in LaGrange and was enrolled in college. He became ill at school and self-quarantined for 10 days. After returning home, he was tested and was negative for the virus, but days later, Michael suffered cardiac arrest and was found to have myocarditis, and inflammation of the heart muscle. Michael died on October 22nd. If throngs of COVID deniers across the nation were not enough, the new administration is attempting to bring the pandemic under control while facing vaccine shortages left by the last one. And then there is the hypocrisy of GOP COVID deniers jumping the vaccine line. Senators like Lindsey Graham, Joni Ernst, and Marco Rubio, who refused to wear masks and attended super spreader events, are getting the coronavirus before the rest of us. They failed to denounce President Donald Trump's numerous lies about this deadly hoax virus, but had no problem getting the vaccine before more vulnerable people on the priority list. One emergency room doctor, after seeing 49-year-old Marco Rubio being vaccinated, said, "I'm an ER doctor, and despite trying, I have not yet been able to be vaccinated." In September, as 184,000 of our fellow Americans had already died from the virus, Joni Ernst, attempting to discredit the COVID fatality numbers, repeated to Iowans the fabricated conspiracy theory that had been championed by groups like QAnon. Healthcare providers and others are reimbursed at a higher rate if COVID is tied to it. So what do you think they're doing? And Senator Graham refused to take a COVID-19 test before his U.S. Senate debate in October, despite two other Republican senators on a committee he chairs recently testing positive. He since has stepped ahead of healthcare providers and higher-risk citizens to get vaccinated. Wealthy people, and that includes athletes, politicians, and other wealthy or well-connected people, aren't usually thought of as essential frontline workers, and they have the most resources at their disposal to mitigating the dangers of the pandemic. They should be considered low priority for vaccination, yet reality told us that would not be the case. The Los Angeles Times spotlighted one prosperous patient that offered five figures to step ahead of the line at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. Dr. Jeff Toll reported a patient that asked, "If I donate $25,000 to Cedars, would that help me get in line?" We get hundreds of calls every single day, Dr. S.N. Ali, who runs Beverly Hills Concierge Doctors, told the Times. The town of Palm Beach, Florida, home to billionaires, CEOs, and President Trump, obtained its own supply of the vaccines to distribute to its residents, the only municipality in the country to do so. The Washington Post reported that a five-star West Palm Beach nursing home has invited wealthy board members to receive vaccines distributed to the home for residents and staff. In spite of nearly 250 years of trying to establish a nation where equality and fair play rules, it does not, and likely never will, as long as a privileged few lacking morals and Christian values are allowed to prevail. Illinois Sheriff's Association announces scholarships. The Illinois Sheriff's Association announces that it will be awarding $58,000 in college scholarships throughout the state of Illinois to students wishing to pursue higher education during the 2021-22 academic year. The scholarships are to be applied to tuition, books, and fees only. The student must be enrolled full-time in a certified institution of higher learning. Within the state of Illinois, full-time online learning is acceptable. Sheriff Derek W. M. Hagen, Iroquois County, will be awarding one scholarship in the amount of $500. There will be no restrictions on any applicant by reason of race, age, creed, color, sex, or national origin. The only limitations are as follows. Applicants must be permanent Illinois residents. Scholarships must be utilized at institutions of higher learning within the state of Illinois. Students must be enrolled as a full-time student during the 21-22 school year, excluding summer session. Applications are now available at the Iroquois County Sheriff's Office or on the internet at /youth-2/. Students must complete the application, answer the essay question, and return all documentation to the Iroquois County Sheriff's Office at 550 South 10th Street, Watseka, Illinois 60970 by March 15th, 2021. It must be postmarked by this date. We'll turn now to the death notices for the week. Grace Poole, 83, of Onarga, passed away January 25th at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until 12 p.m. graveside service on Saturday, February 6th at the Del Rey Cemetery. Burial will follow the service. The family requests casual dress for the service. Memorials may be made to the Buckley Dutch Master Field Improvement Fund or St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Arrangements were made by the Knapp Funeral Home in Onarga. Please share a memory of Grace at knappfuneralhomes.com. David A. Perzee of Gilman, 80, passed away January 9th at Advent Health Sebring in Sebring, Florida. A celebration of life service will be held at a later date. Arrangements were made by Knapp Redinius Funeral Home in Gilman. Memorials may be made to Danforth Reformed Church. Please share a memory of David at knappfuneralhomes.com. Ernest Lloyd Schuler, 81, of Gilman, passed away Tuesday, January 26th at Riverside Medical Center in Kankakee. Cremation rites have been accorded by Knapp Redinius Funeral Home in Gilman. A memorial service will take place at a later date. Memorials may be made to the donor's choice. Please share a memory of Ernest at knappfuneralhomes.com. Mary Jane Spiegler of Gilman, 84, passed away Saturday, January 23rd at her home. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. on Friday, February 5th at Knapp Redinius Funeral Home in Gilman. A celebration of life service for Mary Jane will be private. Memorials may be made to the family's wishes. Please share a memory of Mary at knappfuneralhomes.com. For the full obituary, please see the print version of the Gilman Star. This concludes the reading of the death notices for the week, and now we'll return to local news and opinion and finish. And now a column by Jim Nolan. U.S. needs to step up its game or face losing the economic Cold War. I had lunch this past week with two civic leaders in their handsome small city in central Illinois. Both had moved to their present town for family reasons after careers in other states. They are both concerned about the averageness of their local high school. One is a successful retired schoolman from a Florida district that has sent more graduates to U.S. service academies than maybe any other school in the nation. He recently made a proposal to the local high school that I figured couldn't be refused. The educator offered to fund the creation of an international baccalaureate curriculum, IBC, at the high school. This really rigorous program for talented high schoolers puts them on a path to success in our best universities. Nah, said the school board and superintendent about the offer, we're doing just fine. But our average downstate high schools aren't doing just fine. If you took Chicago's kid scores out of the state averages, most downstate schools would be below average, some significantly so. We have to step up our game or we will lose the hot Cold War competition we are in with China for technological and economic primacy. Nothing wrong with competition, especially when you win it. Yet I fear most Americans are blithely unaware of what is going on. If they were, I would hope they would get about shaping up our nation, which has lost its edge. As I reported in an earlier column, I still recall my first day in Shanghai, now 15 years ago, for one of three teaching stints at a prominent university in that city of 25 to 30 million. I was stretching my legs on that Saturday morning after the grueling flight outside my foreign expert guest quarters. I noted several clutches of darling youngsters in uniforms heading down the neighborhood street toward what looked like a school building. Later, I asked my host professor what I was seeing. Oh, they were going to school. We have school every Saturday until noon, and 1 hour more of instruction each weekday than in the U.S. I'll bet that if the parents of those kids were told their kids couldn't go to school on Saturdays, there would be riots in the streets. I fear that if parents here were told their children had to go to school on Saturdays, there would also be riots in the streets. We have to look beyond our understandable preoccupation with the pandemic and political turmoil to the larger, even more important challenge of intensifying a commitment to education at all levels, and to firming up the growing, soft underbelly of low-achieving American society. Otherwise, we will wake up one day in 15 years or sooner and find that we are dependent on China for rare earth metals, high-tech products, and the software to run our world. America and European nations, plus Japan, colonized and humiliated China and much of Asia in the 19th and early 20th centuries. The proud Chinese haven't forgotten. Over thousands of years of history, a century ago to them is but yesterday. The Chinese are not evil in wanting to once again become the central empire of the world, any more than the West was when it tried to take over the world in the past couple of centuries. It's called competition, and it's brutal right now. With four times as many people as in the U.S., they may have more honor students than we have students, and their people are clever, their English word for smart. But they aren't necessarily world beaters. The Chinese are experiencing ever more oppressive state control, which appears to be stifling some innovation. So their best and brightest may well want to create and innovate in the West. And their earlier one-child program has resulted in leaving China with a high and growing ratio of elderly to producer population. The U.S. has to become more strategic in how it spends its limited money. We can't print forever, as we seem to be doing, without dire consequences for our grandkids. For example, most Americans can do without the additional $1,400 in pandemic largesse that will apparently be splashed onto us soon. That kind of money should instead go toward our research laboratories and into more IBC and AP, advanced placement programs, in our high schools. Our students can handle the challenge of rigorous education. The kids need to be challenged, just as all of us need to step up our competitiveness game. Jim Nolan was a senior fellow and political science professor at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. He's worked for three unindicted governors and published a weekly newspaper in central Illinois. Engineering tech advertisement. Looking for skilled operator of CNC plasma, milling machine, lathe, MIG welder, or a person with technical experience and willingness to learn. We'll also perform other shop and assembly work. Full-time position with great starting pay. We are open to part-time flexible schedule for the right person. Send resume to hr@igse.ag or apply online at igse.ag/contact-us or facebook.com/ilgse. And a letter to the editor. Climate what? Just to make my position crystal clear, I believe in climate change, as the climate has changed for as long as this earth has been in existence. That is a scientific fact. However, I do not believe in man-made climate change. So I guess I am a climate change denier. I contend that there is not a creature, including man, that has the ability to change the weather, let alone the world's climate. A consensus of opinion is not science. If it were, we would still believe the world is flat and the sun and other planets rotate around the earth. So if anyone believes that using fossil fuels for energy is changing the climate and we need to destroy this country's economy and relegate our citizens to poverty, I challenge them to build one of those giant wind turbines from scratch, transport it, and erect it in a farmer's field without using fossil fuel. And for that matter, build one electric car battery without using fossil fuel. If anyone thinks they can tell me how, I await the answer and will be happy to rebut it. As I recall, this climate change stuff started acid rain, then morphed into global warming, and the polar bears are going to disappear because of glaciers melting, and Florida would be underwater. Thank you, Al Gore. He got rich selling carbon shares. In 1975, a guy named Peter Gwynne predicted a new ice age was upon us, and we would run out of food and all die or freeze to death. Now the world is going to turn into one giant desert, and we will run out of food, and the world will be uninhabitable and turn into a cinder. I wish these leftists would make up their minds. George Harvick. This has been Tamara reading the Gilman Star. I hope to read with you again soon. Stay safe, stay well.